Jeffrey Epstein wasn't just the financier or the socialite he cosplayed as. He was the most shadowy, plugged-in figure of my lifetime. Banking, science, intelligence, the arts, presidents, prime ministers, his address book read like a global power schematic. And yet, over half a decade after his death, we still don't have answers. But in the past few months, something shifted. On November 12th, the House Oversight Committee dumped over 20,000 pages of Epstein estate records, and 1 week later, Donald Trump signed a bill ordering the release of all Epstein files. The vault is cracking open. More clearly than ever before, but still nowhere near the full picture, we're seeing names, emails, timelines, and contradictions. Today, I'm going through the most explosive revelations. Trump allegedly knowing about the girls. Michael Wolff coaching Epstein on how to trap Trump. Missing jailhouse footage. Mossad ties. Cyber weapons. Eyes Wide Shut style social networks. This is not the story we were told. It's bigger. Much bigger. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome to the Great Epstein Files Fallout of 2025, where today I will be covering the most juicy, the most impactful, the greatest Epstein drops of information going all the way back to the last few months, back when we had the prison footage release from the FBI in July of 2025, leading all the way up to the most recent Epstein files drop on November 12th by the House Oversight Committee, which was like 20,000 plus files that they released. But before we get into the top Epstein revelations, I want to just quickly say why I'm doing this episode today from a cultural standpoint, but also a personal standpoint. That is, Jeffrey Epstein is the most shadowy, powerful figure, certainly of my lifetime, but arguably over the last 100 years. He is connected like a fucking like a parasite. He has sunk his hooks into science, intelligence, arts, banking. He is in every sector, leveraging mechanisms of control, blackmail, relationships, social elite status climbing, and just working his way in to every which way you can see in society. He seems to have been this like socialite chameleon that managed to get close to some of the most powerful people on the planet and make them quiver when his name is brought up, even though he's been dead now for over 5 years. We haven't really gotten any answers. And I guess that is one of the biggest reasons why I'm recording this episode is from a broad scope. Like there's a lot of people that care about Epstein. This aligns people on all sides of the political aisle. People just want fucking answers on who was Jeffrey Epstein? Who is he associating with? Who were his clients? Why are his victims not being listened to? Why are they not being taken seriously? And also from like a selfish personal standpoint, it's like, I want to know who this guy is because I feel like as a member of society, when we have someone who seems to be this manipulative and this evil and this powerful, you know, we deserve answers as people who pay taxes to government entities that are supposedly investigating Jeffrey Epstein. I want some answers on who this guy was, but we don't seem to be getting anything, or at least anything meaningful. So that's the main reason is like, who the hell is this guy? The second reason, the second thing to note as we get into the top moments of Epstein from the last few months. So November 12th, the House Oversight Committee released 20,000 plus pages from the estate of Jeffrey Epstein. I'm recording this the day before Thanksgiving. I believe it's November 27th. I could have that day wrong, but it's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So a couple weeks after the big document drops. So there may have been things that have come out in the last day or week whenever you're hearing this episode that I may not have covered, so keep that in mind. And then Trump signed a bill to release the Epstein files on November 19th, and they're supposed to be released within 30 days of Trump signing that bill, and we'll get into all of that. But my goal for this episode is to go through the top Epstein revelations, the top bangers of the last few months, just because I feel like we're not getting answers from the legacy corporate media on who this guy is. And so most of my sources, as you'll see, are independent journalists who are taking the ball and running with it, doing the job of like, okay, legacy media is not going to tell us shit. So like, we're going to do some investigating of our own, and we're going to go through the files and examine what is being said and what we know and what the connections are. So this is by no means a definitive tale of who was Jeffrey Epstein, because I don't think any single piece of content can do that. This is more of, I'm going to go through the top 8 or 9 pieces of content that to me are the most shocking, the most impactful, the most telling of who Jeffrey Epstein was and who his relationships were and what this reveals about how he was operating Jeffrey Epstein as an entity. So let's get into number one, which is a video from Breaking Points. Trump knew about the girls. Let's watch this video.
So this is from 2019, and this is from Jeffrey Epstein to Michael Wolff. So it says, victim name redacted, Mar-a-Lago, redacted. Trump said he asked me to resign. Never a member, ever. Of course he knew about the girls. He asked Ghislaine to stop. And this is after, by the way, back in 2015, that Wolff emailed the advice from Michael Wolff to Jeffrey Epstein about potentially crafting a response to hand Donald Trump was, I think you should let him hang himself. If he says he hasn't been on the plane or to the house, then that gives you a valuable PR and political currency. You can hang him in a way that potentially generates a positive benefit for you. Or if it really looks like he could win, you could save him, generating a debt. Interesting line right there. Of course, Wolff continues, it is possible that when asked, he'll say Jeffrey is a great guy and has gotten a raw deal and is a victim of political correctness, which is to be outlawed in a Trump regime. Now, when he says, of course, Trump knew about the girls, this is from Jeffrey Epstein, he asked Ghislaine to stop. That is, in the strangest way ever, confirmation of what Donald Trump has said, which is also in the strangest way ever confirmation that he clearly knew, as he alluded to in media reports before he was president, before Epstein became such a mythical figure. Trump said Jeffrey likes him on the younger side. He said recently, I think he was on Air Force One within just the last few months, saying, yeah, that they were stealing girls from Mar-a-Lago, which is exactly what happened to Virginia Giuffre, who was working at Mar-a-Lago, was poached by Ghislaine Maxwell at Mar-a-Lago.
So that is interesting. The first option, the way I see it, is the more charitable view when it comes to Trump, quote, knowing about the girls, as Epstein said. We know Epstein was obsessed with signaling leverage to foreign diplomats, science elite, past presidents. Trump, or rather Epstein saying that Trump knew about the girls, could be less about the truth and more about Epstein wanting to signal this perception of leverage and power. And one thing that we can say pretty positively about Epstein is that he did have leverage, he did have power. And he used that power to make people do things of his own means. And we're still finding out about the full depth of what that was when it comes to the trafficking of young women and children, when it comes to being a power broker for foreign diplomats and intelligence agencies. But Epstein did have leverage and power, something it seems like someone in his position would also want to do, is give off an even greater perception of leverage and power than they have. So if Epstein is commentating on a president or future president like Trump saying, oh yeah, he knew about the girls, like that kind, that puts Epstein closer status wise to be commenting on a president in such a matter of fact way, casually, of like, oh yeah, Trump knew about the girls. He knew about Ghislaine recruiting women at Mar-a-Lago, and it may have been true. It may not have been true. The second option, which to me seems like the more likely option, the more sinister option, Trump knew about the girls and asked Ghislaine to stop. Ghislaine was grooming and procuring women, young girls, and this was a pattern that Trump was well aware of. There was a moment on Air Force One, which was mentioned in the video, where Trump acknowledged that, yes, Epstein stole young women who worked for me. That was in July of 2025. And according to Trump, Trump banned Epstein from Mar-a-Lago and completely severed ties with Epstein in the early 2000s. More on that later. This is something that I wanted to bring up during the podcast about the email from Epstein that said Trump was aware of the girls and asked Ghislaine to stop. Trump knew about the girls. I forgot to bring this up, and this has to deal with the pattern of Trump being aware of this. If what Epstein said in the email is true, you don't ask someone to stop unless you see something multiple times. And I mean, maybe if something is extremely egregious, or you're like paying very close attention, maybe you lay down your foot, you know, you really fucking lay down the hammer after someone does something one time and you say, hey, stop. But I feel like it's human nature to let things go a little bit. And Trump has other responsibilities. He's, you know, this is back in the early 2000s, allegedly, when Trump knew about the girls. He's on Celebrity Apprentice. He's a billionaire real estate mogul. He's not at Mar-a-Lago all the time, but it's clear that if this is true, if Trump knew about the girls and asked Ghislaine to stop, he's noticing this as a pattern over a course of time, over a period of time. So he might have witnessed instances of Ghislaine recruiting multiple girls and seeing this multiple times, and then being so fucking pissed off where then he or someone went to Ghislaine and said, hey, you got to stop stealing young girls from Mar-a-Lago to recruit into whatever the fuck you're doing. This has to stop right now. Beyond it being a pattern, it seems like this is something that that Trump would have had to clock multiple times, on multiple occasions, this recruitment from Ghislaine from Mar-a-Lago of young women, for Trump to lay the hammer down and say, hey, stop. So that's something I wanted to make clear, that if the email is true, then it seems like this would have had to be a clear pattern of Ghislaine that Trump noticed over multiple instances over a period of time, for him to have to say, you know, fucking stop stealing my bitches from Mar-a-Lago. Let's get into the second juicy Epstein revelation. This also comes from the November 2025 files dump from the House Oversight Committee. It's the Michael Wolff and Jeffrey Epstein email chain. So Michael Wolff is a high-profile journalist. He's with New York Magazine, Vanity Fair. He had 4 best-selling books on Donald Trump. Michael Wolff was secretly advising Jeffrey Epstein on what Trump should say to CNN about their relationship. Epstein literally asked Wolff how Trump should answer debate questions about Epstein himself. So this is the first email. This is Michael Wolff to Jeffrey Epstein, Tuesday, December 15th, 2015 at 8 p.m. Subject, heads up. I hear CNN planning to ask Trump tonight about his relationship with you, either on air or in Scrum afterwards. Jeffrey Epstein responds to Michael Wolff Tuesday, December 15th, 2015 at 11:52 p.m. If we were able to craft an answer for him, what do you think it should be? Michael Wolff responds to Jeffrey Epstein Wednesday, December 16th, 2015 at 4:26 p.m. Importance high. I think you should let him hang himself. If he hasn't been on the plane or to the house, then that gives you a valuable PR and political currency. You can hang him in a way that potentially generates a positive benefit for you. Or if it really looks like he could win, you could save him, generating a debt. Of course, it's possible that when asked, he'll say Jeffrey is a great guy and has gotten a raw deal and is a victim of political correctness, which is to be outlawed in a Trump regime. So to me, this signals that Wolf was not just covering power. He was participating in it. You can't observe and report on political truths and also be a political operator. Those things don't go hand in hand. You can't come to the table and say that you're writing about the truth and then be directly involved in manipulating the things that you claim to be a faithful observer of. This would be like if an NFL commentator was calling the game play by play as he's feeding plays to the quarterback. Like it's insane to claim the high ground of a journalist when you're directly involved in influencing the very things that you're reporting on. Not just influence, you're directly giving advice to a known sex offender. Wolf is coaching a known sex offender, Jeffrey Epstein, on how to capitalize on political gains. Wolf said to Epstein, let Trump hang himself, save him, or generate a debt. Wolf believes Epstein had influence over Trump in 2015, which is long after Trump says him and Epstein cut ties, which is interesting. The third piece of damning Epstein content that I want to get into is the lies in the Epstein jailhouse footage. This is based on the FBI release in 2025, July 2025, of the jailhouse footage of Epstein in Brooklyn. So let's get into it. This is a video by CoffeeZilla.
At 10:38 p.m., the report says someone, probably Noel, carries a bundle of bedding or clothing up the stairs. It's a rare instance the video does catch movement on the stairs, but barely. Let's see that zoomed in and in slow motion again. Several of the video forensic experts we spoke with were skeptical about the report's conclusion and thought that the video could be showing an inmate walking up the stairs. Authorities say this was the last time anyone approached his cell block until his body was discovered the next morning. Again, while the video does not contradict that, experts who viewed the video say the limited field of view makes it impossible to definitively conclude that no one used those stairs in that time period.
And that brings us to the final point, the final biggest lie of all. And that's a direct quote from the DOJ memo about what the footage even shows. And it says this, quote, anyone entering or attempting to enter the tier where Epstein's cell was located from the Shoe Common area would have been captured by this footage. The government's entire case is built on this lie. And that's why it's the biggest, because their whole case for saying no one could have reached him is the idea that this one camera angle shows everything. But let's put Maxwell in our 3D twin and have him walk up the stairs. First, we'll put him on the left side of the staircase. And as you can see, you can barely make him out. However, if we put him on the right side of the staircase, you'll find that you can't see him at all. He's invisible from our view. So there's just obviously a blind spot here, which, by the way, the government already knew because they already admitted in a previous Epstein report saying that this camera angle specifically was a, quote, partial view of the L-tier stairway. So it's not a full view. You can't see everything. And as you can see in this excellent CBS investigation, you could actually access this stairway and Epstein's cell from a doorway invisible to the camera.
But with the primary entrance here, the pathway from the entrance to the stairs is completely out of view of the camera.
Yeah, that's right. You could access Epstein's cell. Our replication of the prison shows the same conclusion. If we have Maxwell walking from the Shoe entrance to Epstein's cell, we can't see him from this camera angle, even though if we make the walls transparent, Obviously, we can see him, but in the raw footage, we'd have no way of knowing if somebody walked this direction.
So yeah, this all-seeing camera myth that the DOJ fed to us, the DOJ's foundational claim was that anyone entering would have been captured by this footage. And that's completely disproven by their own footage. You can see clearly with the path on the stairs. I mean, who is putting this package together from the FBI and matching it with these facts? Anyone who has a basic understanding of just like floor layout geometry can tell you in a, you know, probably a matter of minutes that, yeah, the camera angle based on where it was placed cannot catch someone who's walking on the side of the stairs closest to the wall, but only if they are closer to the railing where you can be revealed only just slightly at that point. But if you just move your body over slightly, you are just completely hidden from camera view. And if the Epstein jail camera didn't see everything, who told the DOJ that it did? Like, where did the certainty originate? Who is feeding the DOJ this information? Did it start internally? Did they come up with this narrative to just say, like, hey, let's just feed everyone that anyone who would have been entering the jail gets captured on camera? Did an outside source suggest that the DOJ just run with this narrative and release it to the public? Like, where is this idea originating? And if the camera isn't all seeing, then the DOJ timeline isn't either. The minute by minute reconstruction provided by the DOJ collapses with these unseen pathways. If you can completely be out of sight by these cameras, and that's what you're basing on, like, okay, this person passed here at this time and then we didn't see them and then we did and you can't see anyone here. If the DOJ is making up an entire timeline based on who you can and cannot catch with the footage, if their original narrative collapses, then so does that timeline. So you can't trust anything that was released in that original DOJ jailhouse footage drop. The next piece of content I want to get into is the fact that Trump possibly spent Thanksgiving with Epstein in 2017. This also comes from emails dropped in the November 2025 files dump and another video by CoffeeZilla. So let's get into it.
We'll also talk about the Thanksgiving message. This one got a lot of attention, which is that Epstein was going to Thanksgiving and he was asked, where are you having Thanksgiving? He says, Eva. This lady, Faith Cates, replies, he's such a snooze. Who else is down there? He replies, David Fizzle, Hansen, Trump. And once again, Trump claims that he was not in contact with Jeffrey Epstein after the early 2000s. He said, hey, I cut him off. I realized he was a bad guy. And if Epstein's having Thanksgiving with him, that's obviously a problem.
The casualness of Epstein responding to who will be at his place on Thanksgiving, David Fizzle, Hansen, Trump. That's not how you list someone you haven't seen in 15 years. That's how you list regulars. Like if one of my friends or acquaintances said, hey, who you having over for Thanksgiving? Who you having over for a house party? And I haven't seen Paul in 15 years, let's say. And my friend knew that. I wouldn't say, yeah, you know, fucking Pat's coming over, Jessica and Paul. And just period, end of sentence, because my friend would be like, bro, you haven't talked to Paul since 2005. Remember when you had that falling out and you publicly harangued Paul in the media and said you cut all ties with him? You're inviting him over for Thanksgiving? And that would be the correct response. You should be like, what the fuck? I thought you cut this person off. So the fact that Epstein was just like casually dropping Trump and, you know, Fizzle, hand, like, this to me seems like, and again, I don't know, I'm not inside Epstein's head, but if Trump really did cut him off in the early 2000s, like Trump claims, I assume that Epstein would hold some weight with Trump's name if he was inviting him over to an event 15 plus years later and be like, hey, by the way, Trump's going to be there. you know, and at least have a sentence or two of like, yeah, I know we haven't talked or whatever, like that's surprising, but yeah, we've patched things up. Like, no, he's just like, yeah, Trump, Fizzle, Hansen, like, you know, he, like, Trump was over last week, or, you know, came over for Easter too. Like, it's a very casual way to drop it. And I know I'm just going off of surface level analysis of how the email seems, but that's all we have right now, is to go through these files and go through these emails and just like sort of try to put ourselves into the minds of who would write an email like this. And to me, this signals pretty casual. This is how I would just list a group of people that I regularly saw, that I was, you know, acquaintances with, friends with. There's like no bad connections there. There's no animosity between me and the people I list on a list like that. The next thing I want to get into is Amy Williams, who is Virginia Giuffre's ghostwriter on her book that came out recently. And Virginia Giuffre is now sadly deceased, but Amy Williams helped her write this book before she passed away. And Amy Williams goes on Piers Morgan to discuss the infamous Prince Andrew Virginia Giuffre photo. And so let's get into this.
Do you have any doubt that she did have sex with Prince Andrew?
No. Absolutely no doubt. Repeatedly. And she didn't just have sex with him. She was forced to sexually service him. That's maybe a distinction without a difference to some, but there's a difference to me.
And we're looking, as you speak, at the infamous picture of her on the first floor of Ghislaine Maxwell's London home. Ghislaine Maxwell's in the background, Andrew in the foreground here with Virginia when she was just 17. There's been a concerted attempt to try and discredit the veracity of that picture. David Boies said to me he had absolutely no doubt that it was a genuine photograph. Again, you know, you must have, as a journalist, been, you know, cautious about making sure this picture is genuine. How much
Absolutely.
Confidence do you have that that is a genuine picture?
I have utter confidence that it's a genuine picture, and I'll tell you how we track that down. Well, much has been made of the fact that Virginia no longer had the photograph, so it must be fake, and it's true. She no longer had the photograph. Why? Because she gave it to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, and they never returned it. However, before she did that, she gave an interview to a British paper, and they sent a photographer and they sent a writer, and the photographer took a picture of the picture, which she still had in her possession. He took a picture of the front and he took a picture of the back. The back had an imprint on it that showed exactly the date and the time and the location of the place that she took that film to be developed. And it was right next to her house in Florida when she got back from London on that trip. We reached out to that photographer who lives in New Zealand, and he verified that he held that photograph in his hands. He took those pictures and he sent us, because we didn't have a copy, we wanted to use it in the book, he sent us a copy of his picture. So we know for sure that that's a real picture, and it was taken on what used to be called a fun saver, which was these disposable cameras. Nobody has them anymore because we all take pictures on our phones. But they had actual film in them, so they had to be developed, and it was a real picture. It couldn't have been doctored. It wasn't a digital picture that can be doctored. So I have utter confidence that it was a real picture. And also, what's often asked is, who took that picture? Well, it was Jeffrey Epstein. Virginia handed her fun saver, which she always traveled with, to Jeffrey Epstein because she thought, I'm meeting a prince, and I grew up watching the movie Cinderella, and I believe that princes are good people, and my mother would never forgive me if I got to meet somebody of royalty and didn't get a picture with him. So she handed her camera, her disposable camera, to Jeffrey Epstein, and he shot that picture.
So it seems like Epstein was not just passively adjacent to Prince Andrew. Epstein was orchestrating, documenting, and curating moments between powerful men like Prince Andrew and trafficked victims. Hey guys, thank you for making it this far in the conversation, which means you're only halfway through the episode. If you would like to keep listening to or watching the entire chat, head over to The Zach Show 2.0 at thezachshow.supercast.com, where you get the full uncut version of every episode ad-free the moment it drops. You also gain access to exclusive AMAs, the ability to suggest questions for future guests, the Zarchives, which are 31 super secret bonus episodes locked behind the vault, monthly essays, and the knowledge that you are supporting a completely independent team of creators. Just me and my trusty editor, Eduardo. If that sounds good to you, head to thezachshow.supercast.com to subscribe today. I'll see you there.